You're listening to a Rock Candy podcast.
Welcome back to Hot Tea Hot Takes, where the tea is hot.
And the takes are hotter.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Evangeline.
And today we come back to you with some talk about pop music, more specifically the pop music of the ancient older days, Evangeline and I's childhood, the early 2000s.
Yeah. Well, astonishingly, somehow it's been 20 years since the, 2000-2001 era.
Oh.
it's shocking because that feels like very like current times to me, but to see people revisiting it as a trend in the way that when I was a child they were revisiting the 70s is shocking and, mm-hmm. and horrifying.
Well, somebody said it to me, and it just like really just made me sit in silence for a minute. They were like, when my students, for example, when that generation mm-hmm. talks about the 90s, it's like when you and I used to talk about the 60s.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's like that same period of time. Like,
horrible.
Oof.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, certainly culture has changed a lot. It's hard to distance myself mentally from the 2000s like that and think back. Because, like, when I was a little kid, thinking about the 60s felt like ancient history.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
I'm sure that my parents didn't love that either. But, like, for me, I think that it's hard because you live through something and then time passes and you're like, but that was just yesterday, while other people are looking at it in the full context of, like, that was actually 20, 30 years ago. And I find it really fascinating, like, to just see how things have come full circle. I think that for us, like, it's very weird that things that I found kind of cringy at that point are coming back and are cool again,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure, my parents probably, but mm-hmm. I just, like, I'm looking at these things and feeling like, oh, I didn't wear that then, and I wouldn't wear it now either. Like, I mean, for a curvier girl, the low-waist jeans trend was, like, very frustrating, at least for me. Like, at the time, I was not as body positive, but I felt like my butt crack was out all the time in jeans like that. And I was like, oh, when high-waisted jeans came back, I was like, this is amazing. And now low-waist jeans are in style again, and I'm like, dang, okay, did we just do this or not? Like,
oh, jeez. Well, did you see that skorts are coming back?
Yeah.
And then that dude was like, oh, my gosh, I've seen these skirts that are shorts, and I was like shivered in 90s homeschooler. I was like,
Yeah, well, because I did have skorts and they weren't cool then.
Yeah.
But people are into it. I mean, I was sort of looking for a skirt at Goodwill the other day? Yes, but only because, hey, they're a very practical piece of clothing.
I mean, they really are.
They really are.
Plus, I think they've improved on the design.
Yeah.
Like, now it's actually shorts under a whole skirt.
And
but back when we were kids,
half.
It was like a half skirt in the front and then it looked like shorts in the back. It looked mm-hmm. real dorky. And
yeah.
the culottes. Remember
yeah.
culottes?
Yes.
Like, everyone,
I had them.
Like, yeah, I had like a couple pairs, but thankfully my parents weren't the type of homeschool parents that made me wear them like all the time. I did know people like that.
Yeah.
Where it was like they can
oh,
only
no,
wear
definitely.
Skirts or culottes. And I was like, ugh.
Well, it was, for us it was a modesty thing. But
yeah.
like I don't, but you're right, now that I think about it, like a skirt is like the mullet of the reverse mullet of bottoms, because it's like butt in the back, no butt in the front. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Of course you don't have a butt in the front. Anyway. sorry. Oh my gosh, double butt. I'm going to have a nightmare tonight. Anyway. No, I just, I think for me too, like, I wasn't really into the whole kind of like juicy, like, I liked Justice sort of, but like the bling and the sort of Legally Blonde, like, Hannah Montana style, Hilary Duff, all of that. That wasn't
yeah,
really me
layered.
Because I was such a nerd.
Yeah.
Right. And so, like, I was dressing like Tony Hawk in that period. Like,
yeah.
I was doing, like,
the
big jeans and the layered shirts, and I was trying to do the tomboy thing. But to see all of that coming back in is wild, because it really looks like, Justice circa 2005, mm-hmm. but it's, like, on, like, these adults.
I was too fat for Justice clothes.
I was, I was also too tall for a lot of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But,
I wonder if those shorts that with the words on the butt are going to come back.
Oh, my gosh.
I was never allowed to wear
those. I was absolutely not allowed to wear that. Too provocative. Even though it's so stupid. I don't know. I'm so sorry. If you're currently wearing shorts with a word on the butt, more power to you.
I'm gonna say I'm proud of you for standing up against the trans
people. Yeah, absolutely. I don't have one word that I think I would really want to put on my butt, so it'd be too hard to choose. But yeah, we were just talking about how it's wild that those trends have come back in and things. I mean, even like, you see people buying vintage flip phones to mm-hmm. for the aesthetic now, and I'm like,
yeah, or they're bringing back like the flip like old new smartphones are trying to do flip technology now.
Razor,
like, the Razor's like re-releasing like, oh, it's a flat screen but it can fold. I'm like, why would I want that?
But the fold was such a difficult part of the design because if that thing got ripped in half like mine did at one point by a 3-year-old, this 3-year-old got his hands on it, ripped it, and so of course like the screen didn't work. Like that's the flaw of a flip phone. So it's wild to me because I was so entranced by touchscreen when we first got it, and to see people going back to that, I'm like, why?
Exactly. Like going back to texting where you have to like press the button 6 times to get to the letter you want. No, thank you.
Please. So anyway, now that we've been boomers for a half hour, no, I'm just kidding. But oh my gosh, it's embarrassing. But yeah, it is very weird to see all that coming back. But I don't really mind the 90s aesthetic because to me, that feels like a little bit longer. Like it feels like, oh, okay, the Friends era and the Kurt Cobain era feels very different than the Britney Spears, Justice, and, Hilary Duff kind of era, because that feels, like, very recent to me. But
kids, we were just, like, little in the 90s.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, that was more, like, kids that were teenagers or whatever in the 90s, so they were born in the 80s. And, like...
Well, what's weird, too, is, like, the current, like, drinking age is, like, you had to be born in 2000, which is, like...
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's wild. Oh,
I mean, that's very obvious. It's 2021. But I saw that, like, on the internet or somewhere recently where it was like, to drink today, you had to be born in 2000. I was like, oh, okay, wow, that feels recent, but it's really not. It's really not.
I know, like, someone is joking, like, now, it's like the waitresses, when they ID you, they don't really have to look very closely at your ID, because if your year starts with a 1, then you're old enough to drink.
Oh, wow, that is true, isn't it, huh? Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so speaking of Britney Spears, and speaking of the music of this era, who, when you think about the earliest 2000s, I'm going to really say, like, before 2010, who sticks out in your mind as kind of the big players during that era?
Well, it's important to note that in that era, I was mostly still listening to exclusively Christian music.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I wasn't really allowed to listen to a ton of secular music. But I do remember the first secular CD I got was Hilary Duff's Most Wanted.
Right.
And that joint slapped, one of my favorite albums ever. So Hilary Duff was definitely a big one. And then also, like, Rihanna was just coming out of the scene, like, the late aughts, like, 2008, 2009. With Umbrella, I remember that was a big hit.
Umbrella, yes. Absolutely world-shaking. Yeah.
Yes, and then, of course, Beyonce was always around because she was Beyonce. Mm-hmm. And Spice Girls.
Yeah.
Spice Girls were huge, I remember that. That was, like, late 90s.
Pussycat Dolls.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nelly Furtado. I felt like this was such a... I guess that's, like, a little bit also into the 2010s, but it was such a defining era for, I think, a lot of women artists because of how they ruled the charts, especially Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, Britney Spears, and Beyonce, and Rihanna. I mean, like, honestly, especially, like, the, what album is it that has Disturbia and Shut Up and Drive and Good Girl Gone Bad?
Yeah, Good Girl, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Like, that was some of the first kind of secular music I listened to as well, and I was obsessed with Disturbia. The dance floor one that Rihanna did, I can't remember, but, those were some of the earliest ones that I listened to at kind of high school dances, and, it felt very much like the heartbeat of the moment was Rihanna.
Where's my Reliant K fans at?
Me, I was a Reliant K fan. I've seen them live, so
I mean, I still remain a Reliant K fan. They're pretty awesome,
right? I know. Oh my gosh, that's very. A lot of that feels very 2000s too.
I mean, the punk bands and punk rock in general was like huge in the 2000s.
That's true.
Like freaking Simple Plan.
Yeah,
and
Obviously, Fall Out Boy.
Fall Out Boy, Good Charlotte.
Evanescence.
Evanescence. Who's the people that do the Somebody Once Told Me
Something? Smash Mouth.
Smash Mouth, yeah. I was like, why the fuck?
Panic at the Disco.
Yes.
I mean, I guess, like, they were probably still considered more indie, but, like, they were really coming to the forefront more,
Paramore.
I think. Paramore, of course, of course. Because, like, that was sort of when Fall Out Boy was kind of, like, crossing over to the mainstream a little bit more. Like, they had Jay-Z on, you know, on their, one of their songs, Thriller, and they had, like, you know, they were doing some more crossover stuff. And so the emo movement was kind of coming over into the mainstream a little bit more. Definitely, like, that big, I've seen people, like, revisiting the emo aesthetic, and the, like, I'm not gonna say goth because I think that's a different thing. Yeah. But when I say emo, I mean like those, the big shaggy hair and the giant like eyeliner and
The eyeliner, the like swoopy bangs, the like everyone wearing like skater clothes.
Yeah, and the rawr thing.
Avril Lavigne era too.
Yeah, Avril Lavigne was such a blueprint for that. Yeah, and honestly, she kind of like, I mean, you know, like Michael Scott said, she rocks harder than anyone alive, and she has acne, so that's what he said. But I actually still love a lot of her music. I think that it's like very good. You know, she really was good at what she was doing.
It was very much the moment.
right, exactly. So yeah, I feel like it was like there was a lot of women artists that were. I mean, you know, was it necessarily the most like deep soul searching music all the time? No, not necessarily. No. But like, at least, like, there was, like, that representation on the charts. Now, women in hip-hop, not really. Not the way that we are seeing it today.
No, there was, like, I think Lil' Kim had a few little stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, a couple, or Lil' Mom, one of them. And a handful, but really, it was not, it definitely wasn't the golden age of women rappers that we're seeing today.
And Nicki was kind of getting started. I mean, of course, there was, like, Moment for Life and Fly and Super Bass, obviously.
And that's like more 2010s.
Yeah, it was later.
Like Nicki and Drake and them, that kind of got started in like 2010, right when I was going to college. So that's
what I mean, then of course there was Milkshake, you know.
Well, there was like that. You know, like some of those novelty hits, but not like big, you know.
You weren't seeing that.
That's a Sean.
Yes.
Gucci, Louis, Sweetie, Prada.
You weren't, well, and I mean, Fergie.
Yes.
Fergalicious, you know, you used to listen to that, and Glamorous all the time. But were we seeing, like, this kind of female, you know, reigning of women rappers? No, not really.
Not hardly.
Things have changed so much.
They have.
And honestly, I think, like, the influence of hip-hop over the pop charts has just dramatically grown in the past, you know, 5 or 10, maybe 10 years. Probably 10, but I mean, definitely more recently, too, where you're seeing even the poppiest of the pop have, you know, trap beats or hip-hop beats in the background, featuring people who, you know, people who are traditionally pop having a rapper on it. Like, that's not new, but, like, when you look at the charts and you look at it, it's, like, definitely not the Katy Perry era, where it was like, you know, California Girls and Bubblegum and Lady Gaga being weird. Like that whole era just didn't feel like, I guess, like Katy Perry did have that one song with Kanye. But
that was a weird song.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I remember a very specific period. I guess it was a little later, like 2011. Where you could not go, like, I mean, Katy Perry had, like, 5 songs at the top, like, 10 at the same time. And so it was like you listened to the radio and it was just basically the Katy Perry
channel.
She
dominated.
It was insane. But,
this is sort of a sidebar, but yesterday I was at the CBD store and I was, like, walking through and for whatever reason, the dude had, like, this bootleg radio station playing.
Okay.
Where, like, it was playing these pop hits, but clearly being covered by, like, people that weren't the original singers. Like, I heard a cover of that, one of the recent Justin Bieber ones. I don't think it was Holy, but it was one of those.
The one that where he says the thing about the kitchen?
No, it was holy because he's a I'm running to the altar like a track star. Yeah. It was somebody covering that and somebody covering Hello from the Other Side by Adele. And like every time I was like, I know this song, but the person singing, that's not Adele, that's not Justin Bieber.
When
like,
you want to
bootleg radio station that you find.
When you want to play Top 40 in your store, but you don't have a license. And so
and that's what I'm saying. I was like, okay, I remember, like, I'm pretty sure you have to have a specific license to play like radio stations and stuff like that.
I think so. Obviously, considering I currently work at a retail establishment and we don't play that music. But some of it like has obviously passed into the point where the artists are saying, okay, I can let this be played in the grocery store now.
And there's certain licenses that are like catch-all, like you have a license to play X, and like the radio stations have these, where they get a license to play like a bunch of music. They don't have to get an individual license for every song.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of like, you know, the grocery store, like a lot of the music that I do hear working is from this era, specifically the more family friendly. I really was into Jason Mraz at this point, which is weird, knowing who I am now.
White guy with acoustic guitar, which was like half the radio at that point.
Right. Well, there was James Blunt, there was John Mayer, there was...
Jack Johnson.
Jack Johnson. Yeah. Oh my gosh, I loved him. I don't know why I was so beachy, because I didn't live at the beach and I wasn't there that often, but I guess I was just a lot more carefree at that point, which I wish I was there now.
Carefree, don't know her.
Oh, no worries. But I loved Lucky and I loved I'm Yours and I loved a bunch of Jason Mraz's other stuff. Just
all those
because
songs of like every college boy with a guitar knows how to play in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, here's Lucky. Like, you know, I just feel like, I was very into that. I was very into Banana Pancakes and a bunch of other.
Banana Pancakes.
Yeah, right? I don't know. I mean, it just feels weird that he was like, Jason Mraz was my favorite because I moved so drastically away from that kind of music.
Yeah.
But it's very, I mean, hearing it now. And Colby Calais.
Oh, yeah.
Amy Winehouse. They're playing a lot of Sarah Bareilles, a lot of Ingrid Michaelson was like huge for me. I loved Ingrid Michaelson. And I honestly still do. She's a really cool person.
Just about all of these people are on my playlist. Like, I have a playlist that I share with my boyfriend. And I always add stuff to it, and like, Ingrid Michaelson, there's a bunch of people on there.
Oh my gosh. Well, Ingrid Michaelson and Sarah Bareilles are still, like, obviously so talented that, like, I don't mind hearing their songs. There's some songs that come on the grocery store radio that I'm like, wow, this sucks. But not them. Like, I'm like, oh, I've heard this a million times, but I still enjoy this.
Like, I see them more as, like, indie artists that had a couple of fluke radio hits.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, later on, Sarah Bareilles had, like, Brave and stuff, like, the bigger.
Yeah.
But I really loved, like, King of Anything and, I can't even remember.
I love Love Song. That's my favorite.
Yes, Love Song.
My favorite
thing everybody knew how to play that on the piano for, like, a hot minute.
And my favorite thing about Love Song is that she didn't write it as a love song. She actually wrote it as a middle finger to her record label.
Oh, really?
Yes. So, like, they had basically been pushing her to, when she had presented the album that she wanted, and they were like, we need another love song, and then we need another radio hit, love song. Those are what sells. And she was so frustrated
with that
she, like, wrote a whole song, like, I'm not going to write you a love song. And then they loved it. They thought it was a love song. They were like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. And it was a number one hit. And
I can't believe I never thought about the fact that it could be towards the record label. Like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't even catch on right away. Like, they thought, oh, yeah, this works as a breakup song.
Anti-love
but they
song.
Totally, like, were accepting of it. She's like, I'm writing this.
She's like, for you.
Like, I hate you guys.
That is so funny. Yeah, because I don't know. It was, like, very kind of sassy and spiteful. Mm-hmm. She had
passive
such
aggressive.
A good. Yeah, she had such a, like, personality that came through in her music. I listened to a lot of that kind of genre because I think it was a little less, quote unquote, provocative.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like backed into my love for hip hop and rap because I kind of at the time felt like it was, quote unquote, inappropriate because that was just kind of like, you know, what everybody was saying. And, but I would go to my friends' houses and listen to their iPods before I had my own and be like, can I listen to Yeah by Usher? Can I please listen to Hips Don't Lie? Can I listen to... And, you know, this was the era of Ludacris, the era of Timbaland, era of, obviously, 50 Cent, Eminem, and, you know, I mean, obviously, Eminem, like, just was blowing up the charts, but...
Mm-hmm.
It was, and, you know, Snoop Dogg. So, like, there was just so much, I mean, nostalgic, good rap coming out at this point. that was kind of, I think, more club-based. Mm-hmm. It was more like dancing in the club-based. I mean, obviously, Flo Rida had a huge, like, era during this point, then Pitbull.
And then Lil Jon.
Lil Jon, mm-hmm. absolutely. And like you said, like, yeah, just even saying that, like, that was so
Oh, kind you of, know who else? T-Pain.
T-Pain was big. I love him.
He's T-Pain is such a so cool talented. Dude. Like, he's, like, if you've ever heard him sing acoustically, his voice is his amazing.
Beautiful voice. And he's, like, super into animation. Doesn't he Twitch stream now?
Yeah.
I was listening.
Oh, I just now read a headline that was like somebody called T-Pain a racial slur over like Twitch where they were playing Call of Duty and then he wiped out their whole platoon.
Nice. He's like, actually, I don't think you want to do that. That is funny because I think Soulja Boy Twitch streams now too. Yeah. You know, so I just, it is very funny to see these guys who were so big at that point, like moving on with their lives and being like, actually, I think I want to play video games now. But yeah, like it's funny because I knew all these songs and it's like, they are truly about grinding in the club. And I was like, you know, 13, yeah. like, yeah. And so.
She ground in many clubs when she was 13.
Oh, so many, so many.
By that I mean 4-H clubs.
4-H. Please, I was in the Christian version of Girl Scouts. No. Yeah, no, I was actually.
Were they like pioneer women or what were we all called?
Keepers at Home.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
I didn't think about it a lot. I didn't think about the name. Look, it sounds bad. I learned a lot of great skills. I learned how to weave a basket. Could I do it now? No, I could not. But I also learned how to ice skate backwards.
Oh, hey.
And bake a loaf of bread.
Nice. Well, that came in handy during the quarantine. I saw a meme that was like, I love how when we were in the quarantine, we were faced with having to like live with our own thoughts for a second. We were like, absolutely not. I'm going to learn how to bake bread from scratch.
It's like, oh, no, no. Oh, no. No. Absolutely not. You know, that's wild. I did not bake a loaf of bread. Did I? I don't remember ever making bread.
I did a lot
bread.
Of stuff. I tried the frothy, the frothy coffee. Yeah, I did bake some bread, I'm pretty sure. I didn't try sourdough. I knew some people that tried sourdough. I didn't have the patience for that. But I think I did make some kind of bread.
Yeah, sourdough
does take that time. I made pie crust, like, from scratch, I made pie crust from a TikTok, and that was pretty good. And then I made an apple pie, which is, like, stuff I had around my house.
Well, I was vegan for, like, the first half, and realized how, I mean, it really takes dedication, especially if you're coming from vegetarian.
Can't relate.
I started doing retail, like, halfway through the pandemic, too, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is really hard. So I want to say, all the vegans out there, I really respect you, because it takes a lot of creativity and work to eat vegan in this, like, society that is so, I sound like the Joker.
We live in a society.
But it is true. It's a very meat-based society, and so, yeah. So I tried a lot of recipes, vegan recipes, early on in pandemic because I was, you know, not doing retail yet and I had more time to kind of, you know, cook lentils, you know. But, yeah, I had a lot of weird phases. Got really into popcorn for a hot minute. Into bubblegum. I don't know why.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I remember getting popcorn a little bit pre-pandemic. I was making, like, kettle corn all the time.
Oh, my gosh. When you get into popcorn, it's like you don't want anything but popcorn, and then you forget about it for a year.
Yeah, it's like these weird phases, and then it's like, oh, that was interesting, and then I forget ever doing
it. It's because, like you said, there's nothing to focus on except your own thoughts. So you're like, popcorn.
You like, gotta do something else. I started diamond painting.
Yes, I did, and she does very beautiful diamond paintings. I got really into zucchini for a hot minute, doing different stuff with zucchini. But yeah,
I don't know how we got here, but anyway.
No, that, I mean, it's true. It is true. But yeah, like, I don't even remember. Another huge thing of this era was the Black Eyed Peas, too, obviously.
Yes. Which, you know, for better or for worse.
For better or for worse.
The Black Eyed Peas were there.
But I got a feeling, though, like, if you wanted to absolutely get ready for the wildest Hope School sock hop of your life, which I did do multiple sock hops. You just wear socks. You dance at a gym.
We did a flower kickball.
What's that?
It's where you...
Flower kickball?
Okay, literally. So the church has a gym, and they cover it in, like, plastic wrap or whatever, and then they cover it in flour. Bags and bags and bags of cooking flour.
Kickball
in your socks, and you slide all over the place because it's covered in flour. And to this day, I'm, like, reflecting on why we did that. Ah! What a waste of food it was.
I've never heard of this in my life.
Shocked that nobody got a concussion because we were literally just sliding around. I mean, it seems like...
I think I would be coughing up flour for a year.
Like, we were covered in flour. Like, it was all over your face and hair, and then if you sweat, then it just turned into dough on your face.
Ew! face no.
Hey, I mean, at the time, I thought it was the most awesome thing ever, but now every time I tell somebody about it, they look at me like, what the hell?
I don't know. Sometimes if things were just normalized in your life, you don't realize how weird they were. But, you know, people go to college and they do foam parties.
Yeah, exactly. I did that one to a bubble party, and that's one of the first times that I grinded on the
Wow, at a bubble party?
At a bubble party, yes.
I should have not. I had the opportunity at one point to go to one, and I did not go.
Wow. It was just really weird.
People love, humans love to, for no reason, get covered in weird stuff. It's like the tomato throwing thing.
Or
in
like
Italy,
that race where they have the marathon Spain. Through like the paint or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Like, we're like, what's a fun thing to do? Okay, get super messy, get covered in stuff, because that's what not what humans are supposed to do.
Yeah. Ooh. We like to get messy. We're basically not different than toddlers.
I know. It's an excuse to get messy. But anyway, yeah, the sock hop, you know. You wear your best socks, dance in the dark. Very, very PG, but like, yeah, definitely. I Got a Feeling was playing there. T.I., Live Your Life.
You couldn't escape I Got a Feeling for a minute there. That was everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I think I've said this before. It was one of the first five songs I bought on my iPod when I got my iPod for the first time, because it just reminded me of, like, having fun with my friends, you know? So, I don't know.
Tonight's the night. Let's live it all. I got my money.
Yeah.
Let's spend it all.
But, yeah, the Black Eyed Peas also.
Oh, you know what the funny part about that song was? The random, random Yiddish that they threw in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, they said Mazel Tov. They also said L'chaim.
For
no reason. It's like, Mazel Tov, L'chaim. And I'm like, what? Are any of you Jewish? What's happening here?
They partied so hard, the floor of the club crashed through into a bar mitzvah, and they were like, I'm so sorry. Excuse me.
It's like so. I remember back then, I was very into, like, Cracked, like, the website, but they also had videos, and it wasn't Michael Swain, but it was one of their contributors. He probably doesn't work there anymore, but he's Jewish, and he would make jokes about, like, wow, thanks for taking my culture and, like, using it as a shout-out phrase Black Eyed Peas.
That is funny. It is, I mean, that is a weird thing to put into a song.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Black Eyed Peas really owned the radio for a minute, too, especially later, like, in the 2010s. Mm-hmm. You know,
I'm a bee.
Yeah, boom boom pow. Obviously, yep.
Gosh.
My humps.
My humps. Oh gosh.
My humps is such a wild song, because I, before then and after that, women don't refer to lumpy parts of their bodies as humps,
which they shouldn't, because no one should have ever done that.
Which is so funny appealing. That they were like, "This is a cool phrase." Maybe it'll
my
catch
humps,
on.
My lovely lady lumps. That's disgusting.
Gross.
I will never call like hers humps or lumps.
Lumps?
Like, lumps, that's like cancer. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it sounds bad. And I'm not a camel. So anyway, it feels like they were trying to coin something, and then everybody was like, cool song, but nah, we're not going to say that.
I mean, like, wait, like, go back 10 years to Humps and a Bump, which was MC Hammer's songs when he was trying to be a hard gangster or whatever.
Yes.
Give me the girls with the humps and a bump. And then later that was sampled by Fifth Harmony.
Is it really? Yeah. Okay, I didn't know that.
With me, the girls with their humps and day bumps. And I was like,
humps and day
that
bumps.
Wasn't needed at all.
I don't know. Humps is such a weird word. Like, I feel like it's not even sexy. It was true. I was listening to Lollipop, too, and then Candy Shop.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh. There were so many... like, songs comparing phallic images to candy. I'm like, come on, all right. I guess it's better than humps, but not by much.
Not by much. Like a lollipop. Like the lollipop, take it to the candy shop. Like, yeah, we get it.
All right, we gotcha.
It's better than Fly Go Hard Like Geese Erection.
Ew,
That's a Lil Wayne lyric.
Ew.
Fly Go Hard Like Geese Erection.
Like geese erection.
Yes, because a goose with an erection is hard and they fly.
Gosh. I actually, okay, all right. I was going to talk about Lil Wayne, because I have been listening to...
Lil Wayne was everywhere in this era.
Yeah. Well, Young Money, obviously, was coming up. The Carter 3, I think, is a great album. Mm-hmm. I was listening to it the other day. He really has some amazing turns of phrase, and then he'll turn around and say the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, we've talked about the fact before that
all the
Lil Wayne...
Poop jokes
he talks about poop and pee all the time. I'm like, Lil Wayne, what is your deal? But you're right, yeah. Sometimes
I mean, hey, Mozart was a great composer, and he has a song called Lick My Ass, and it's all about poop. So that's okay.
Mozart does?
Yeah, Mozart. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, Mozart literally has Lick My Arsch or whatever. Yeah, lick my
of
ass.
Of course he
and
does.
And it's a song like Lick My Ass, and then he also wrote letters to his cousin where he was like, I would like to shit upon your face and watch it drip down your nose.
Ew.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. Like him and his family, like his cousin, I think his sister, and his father maybe, they would all, it was like an inside joke. They would just write poop jokes to each other. It was so weird.
But it's like not that different. I mean, I'm not going to do it myself, but yeah, actually I'm not that surprised that he would do that, just knowing what I know about Mozart. But yeah, I mean, you know, let's just say it, it's a universal human experience to talk about poop. Shakespeare did. Like, we're not going to pretend that Lil Wayne isn't, you know, just a genius for talking about poop and pee all the time.
And geese erections.
Oh, that one is bad, though. I don't like that one. I don't like it at all.
Why go hard? And I think we rhyme it with yeast infection. Now I gotta look it up.
Oh, I hope not. Geese erection, yeast infection.
Like that could just be something I came up with in my head, but
I think that it doesn't it track though? It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it was Dr. Carter. Fly go hard like geese erection, fashion patrol, police detection. I stay tight like Chinese connection. I stay tight like pussy at night. That third line seems a little racist.
Yeah, that's weird. Uh-oh. Well, I think I was thinking about the we were talking about Bedrock earlier, and I was thinking about the Nicki lyric where she's like,
pushing on your sideburns?
Well, pussy on your sideburns, but also, and I be coming from the top as
oh, he does say yeast infection. Swagger tighter than a yeast infection. Fly go hard like geese erection. Fashion
does he
patrol
know what a yeast infection is? It doesn't make you tight.
Tighter than a yeast infection. Fly go hard, nor is it tight. Fly go hard like geese erection. Fashion patrol, police detection. I stay tight like Chinese connection. I stay tight like pussy at night. Baby, don't get me wrong. I could do that pussy right. But I'm too wrong to write, too fresh to fight. Too paid to freestyle, too paid to freestyle.
Okay, there's an important comma here. There's an important comma. And the comma is between geese and erection.
Like, I think it was this punchline rat. That was very big at the time.
Yes,
remember?
Punchline
or
rat.
Like, when they, like, 'cause that was the same thing in Bedrock, where they'd say a thing and then they would just, like, say
asbestos.
Work.
Asbestos. Like,
and
Nikki says that.
The top. Asbestos. Remember, then I got a grocery bag. I'm gonna.
Well, and then I was listening to that, oh, sorry. The one on the Carter 3 where he's like, I need a Winn-Dixie grocery bag full of money by the DJ station. Like, at the beginning of the song, I'm like, whoa. Oh, coming in really hard. But anyway, maybe he doesn't mean a goose's erection. You think he does?
I think he does because it says, fly go hard like geese, comma, erection. So, like, hard, what geese fly... And they,
well, maybe he just means, like, the geese fly and they're not hard.
Yeah, but then why would he say erection?
I don't know. I think it's just rhyming. I don't know. I just don't like to think about that. Anyway, now we've made our whole audience think about it.
I'm pretty sure
he means
the goose has an erection. And it's tighter than a yeast infection.
It's not. Yeast infections are not tight, kids.
They are not tight, kids.
They hurt, and it sucks.
Always pee.
Yeah, always pee. But anyway, yeah. But yeah, this was, like, an interesting time for, like, rap, I think, was a little goofier.
Yeah.
Like, people were not as afraid to say weird stuff and have, like, weird rhymes. Oh my gosh, am I even gonna have an example? But, like, obviously Lil Wayne was very much into this at that point.
And, like, Eminem did a lot of weird, goofy stuff, too.
Yeah.
Like, his whole, like, lose it or whatever. Like,
yeah. Well, obviously Slim Shady, like, if you listen to it. I've been listening to it recently. I don't know why, but I just got back into that era of Eminem for a minute. And I was like, oh my gosh, like... Yeah, I get it. Like, I mean, I don't really like him as a person. People are like, Gen Z is canceling Eminem. I'm like, he's done a lot of stuff I would not stand behind.
Yeah.
But do I think he's an incredible rapper? Yeah, for sure. I get it. I get why he was, like, on the charts like that.
And even, like, the whole Gen Z's trying to, because that came at the same time as the whole, like, Gen Z versus millennials fight in heavy quotation marks on TikTok, which is mostly just millennials embarrassing themselves. I'm like, why are y'all
so
fighting with teenagers? Like, this is humiliating. Why are you acting like
this? You're looking like boomers.
Like, you look
watching
like
the
boomers.
People.
Look exactly like boomers. Like, the whole, like, oh, yeah, screw you, Gen Z. I'll wear my skinny jeans if I want to. Like, nobody's telling you you can't wear skinny jeans. Like, this is as embarrassing as when your boomer mom is like, these kids these days don't know how hard it is to, you know, like, you just sound like you complain about old boomers, and then you're going to sit here and antagonize the Gen Z and say, the kids these days, they don't know, and they want to kind of cancel my favorite artist. Like, you sound like boomers right now.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, it also is, like, very head in the sand to kind of pretend that, like, Eminem is untouchable. Of course he's not.
Like, yeah, I mean, it, like, I don't think they'll be successful at, quote-unquote, canceling him. Also, I read somewhere that apparently he was going to address cancel culture in his new album, and I'm like, how about don't? How about we don't do that? You know, Lana Del Rey said the same thing, and Lana Del Rey is one of those people that I love as an artist, but can never keep her mouth shut.
She has done so much embarrassing stuff. She's,
like, aggressively white womaning all over. Her whole career is just a big white woman moment.
Like, yeah. Just,
like, shut up. Oh, my gosh. Stop talking. Cease.
Yeah, and I do feel like every time, and it's so funny because, like, I really did like her music, but every successive thing that she's, especially during the pandemic with not wearing a mask, with her kind of whole rant about how she feels drowned out by black women, you know?
Yeah, that exactly. Sort of like, oh, it's such a bad question for the culture. Like, bitch, if you don't sit down. And then what she said, and then she said that her new album was going to take revenge or whatever on her critics. And, like, it was going to be her Reputation era, basically, which I'm like, that was not Taylor's best era, and it's not going to be yours.
Was it Chemtrails Over the Country
Club?
Yeah,
Chemtrails Over the Country Club. Yeah, she was going to take revenge on people saying that she was tokenized black people, because, you know, when she was what happened was she made the chemtrails thing, and before anyone even had said anything, she was like, yes, there are black people on my cover because I have black friends and I've dated rappers. I'm like, girl, what are you talking about?
That was so embarrassing that she said she dated rappers. I'm like, okay.
And, like, the only part, the funny thing is, the only rapper I think she's publicly dated is G-Eazy, who's not black.
I can't remember her dating. I don't know who she's dated. It does not matter to me. But I do feel like that was so embarrassing that she was like, I think that she invited it. She knew that there was going to be that criticism of her album cover, which, you know, does have people of color on it. But, like, the way that she was like, these are my black friends. It was so embarrassing. And she also, I think she really plays into this, like, I'm an artist, and I hate it when angry, loud black people get in my way. I'm like, are you kidding?
Like, the optics. It's like she can never, like, step outside of herself and just think about, like, what you're saying and what it looks like. Because, I mean, she's like, oh, I wasn't saying that I disliked those artists when I complained almost exclusively about black women. Like,
about Beyonce, I complained about this
thing, but then I specifically called out Beyonce and Rihanna and Nicki Minaj. I think there was one white person she mentioned, which is Ariana Grande, who just heavily cribs all those other people anyway. And it's like,
it was very obviously a list of talented, powerful black women that she was having a gripe with, and then she was like, of course I didn't mean that. I'm like, yeah, but think about what you write. Proofread it one time and think about what this how it is looks to look other like people. For you.
And the thing is, she never, like, takes the time to self-reflect. She just gets defensive. So every time somebody says, hey, maybe you don't want to say things quite like that, then she's like, oh, I'm going to take revenge on my critics. I have black friends I dated. Like, she's like, oh, it just gets worse and worse.
Yeah, it's been very disappointing because I think she hid behind a very, like, potent aesthetic for a long time, this idea. And it was not even, like, a very healthy one. It was very much like Sugar Baby, like, you know, drugs and money and sex and all of that. But then her real personality is coming out, and it's so unattractive, the things that she's doing and how needlessly defensive of things that she obviously should have been more cognizant of her reputation. Like, even if she believes these things in her heart, like, you gotta step back and say,
yeah, how does it look?
How does this look?
Yeah, and it's just like,
like, you know, she doesn't need to believe these things in her heart anyway, but she has no self-awareness of PR.
That's the thing. No self-awareness whatsoever, and apparently not a very good PR person. And, like, the criticisms about, like, her, how her music was glorifying abuse, which I only saw a handful of people saying that, but, like, it's like, it's worth at least contemplating. Like, I'm not saying, like, again, I like a lot of her music, but it is, like you said, it does have some elements of it that it could be at least questioned.
It's a little bit like Lolita-y, where it's like definitely that young, beautiful woman, old man kind of relationship.
Yeah.
And I did used to listen to her music. Like, I think that she has some beautiful songs.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that, like, it's a shame because I do think that some of her newer music, like Norman fucking Rockwell, was really good stuff. And she works with Jack Antonoff, who I really like from Bleachers, and he works with Lorde and Taylor. Not Lorde and Taylor, like, but, you know, Lorde and Taylor Swift. And it's just disappointing.
Oh, I was not the, the movie directors.
No.
Okay, I was
sorry.
Like,
So confusing, right? I meant Lord and Taylor Swift. Sorry. but yeah, I just am like, it's so disappointing to see these really, really unattractive things coming out from her, because like she has this glossy, beautiful image, and then it's like, oh, beneath the surface. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, and I also, a lot of bad opinions. You talk about like the heavy cribbing of hip hop culture that she's always done.
Oh, for which, sure.
Like,
for sure.
Trip hop, that kind of thing, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like the her Woodstock era, where she, it was very much like about drugs and about stuff like that, and her kind of like borrowing and using of black people to look good. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know. I don't even know all of her relationships with, you know, these people, her, all of her quote-unquote black friends. But it's one of those situations where she's obviously using those people in her life to make herself look better, which is a disservice to them.
Yeah.
It's a disservice to them as people, and to use them in that way is so grody to me, to just be able to say, oh, I dated rappers. Like, okay, like, that is, it just makes it feel like you dated them for an excuse.
Yeah, for the excuse and for the like, you know, just to, like I said, and like I said, I'm pretty sure I read this correctly, that the only rapper that she has publicly dated is a white rapper, so it's just like, ugh, if you're going to draw attention to it, then at least make sure you've been on record as dating a person at some point.
And I hate, like, you know, like, I'm not trying to be, like, you know, roasting a woman over her dating life. Like, I'm not trying to be like, you know, oh, she's like, you know, dating.
No, it's not about her dating life. It's about, like, if you're going to specifically use the I'm dating a black person defense when people say that maybe you're a little racist, it's like, A, that's a bad defense, period. But B, it's like, if you haven't even publicly dated a black person, it looks even weirder. Like, well, what are you talking about? Like,
Yeah.
Her stans are very intense. And, like, I remember I was making a video on her once on my TikTok, and I wasn't even like, I said, I was like, I'm a fan of her music, but like, shut up. And I was talking about it, and people were like, oh, you just, when women can't have feelings and the misogyny, and I'm like, this is just like when I criticized Taylor Swift, did I get accused of misogyny? Like, y'all are very protective of white women.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, because like, I don't know, I mean, yeah, I'm seeing here, like, she did date Jeezy. Like, if you're going to use your relationships as an example of how you're not racist, like, you got to be really careful, because your relationships are going to be, you know, put up, like, all these guys are white.
Yeah,
white.
All of the guys that she has publicly dated are white. That's the thing. And it's like, I'm not saying, again, who you date is your business, but if you're going to specifically say, I can't be racist, I date rappers, and then
it's
only Jeezy ever publicly voted white people.
That's so wild. That's so wild. Anyway, I know.
Yeah. Is that Tom Hiddleston?
Well, that was a different article.
Oh, okay.
She didn't date Tom Hiddleston. It was like, who did Tom Hiddleston is dating? No, anyway, I don't know why we're talking about this, but
didn't Tom Hiddleston date Taylor Swift at some point?
No, you're right. They at least talked. I don't know if they dated. Relationship. Oh, very public fling with Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Apparently, she wrote some songs.
How much older is he than Taylor Swift?
Great question. I have no idea.
How old Tom Hiddleston is, because sometimes he looks 50 something, and sometimes he looks.
He's got one of those weird British faces, which are beyond age.
It's exactly. It's hard to pinpoint the age.
Like Benedict Cumberbatch. It's like, anyway.
You could be 57 or 32. I'm not really sure.
Hard to tell. He is 40.
Oh. I mean, that's 10 years.
I guess that tracks, right?
Yeah, I guess. That's a little bit questionable, but not as bad as I thought. It's not like as bad as when she dated John Mayer, and he was like way older.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
because she was younger at the time, too. Like,
I know. Yeah, that's weird. John Mayer, that's another kettle of fish.
yes,
I don't know that much about him. I know that there's a lot of discourse about
him. I feel like there was, like, discourse and controversy, but I feel like I was too young and didn't really care to look into it, so I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, John, like, I'm just, like, somebody screaming at their headset right now, like, don't you know I'm
it's
John
like,
Mayer?
He did this, yeah, I'm sure, like I said, I do remember there had been previous controversies, but if you told me to name them, I could not do it.
Oh, this is an April 1st, 2021 insider article called A Complete History of John Mayer's Problems and Scandals.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Sexism and racism.
Wow.
Uh-oh, he used the N-word in an interview with Playboy?
Oh, my goodness.
John.
Anecdotes from ex-girlfriends paint him as toxic and manipulative.
Well, if you listen to some of his lyrics, I'm not surprised.
That tracks.
Can you imagine me doing an interview with a Playboy and being like, this is the time for me to do this?
Well, it's like with the Papa John thing. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were like, well, it's not fair because Papa John was just like telling a story, like quoting someone. I'm like, but why that story? What possessed him? Because they were like having a general conversation about, like, I don't even remember what they were talking about. It was like pizza, and maybe it was about racial sensitivity, but there was no like opening for him to just suddenly go like, well, back in my day, here's how we used to hate crime black people. Like, why did you start talking about
in a meeting?
Like, in a meeting, in a teleconference. Insane. Like, why would you start volunteering that?
He was like, I think this is the time to use this word.
Like, to share my experiences or my knowledge of hate crimes. Like, bruh, keep that to yourself. What is wrong with you?
Right, insane.
And later come out and be like, I've been working so hard for the last 20 months to stop saying the N-word.
Like, to purge it from my vocabulary.
Kind of racial slur boot camp where, like, you gotta zap every time you say it.
Well, he is on TikTok now, and his comments are still, like, the number one comment was, did you purge it from your vocabulary? Even though that video had nothing to do with anything about that. Like, you still using it? You still using it, Papa?
You still using it, Papa?
So anyway, back to John Mayer. He made sure everyone knew in 2008 that he dumped Jennifer Aniston, saying he burned the American flag. Okay, so this is part of the reason why they broke up, is he burned an American flag, she didn't like it, and then he dumped her.
Okay. What? I mean, frankly, I don't care that he burned an American flag. Really.
It's just very
That's
wild
a random
that,
thing to share.
She said... what does that have to do with anything? But also, like, he obviously wanted everybody to know that he dumped one of the most beautiful women, like, ever. Like, no, I did that.
And especially in that era, like, it wasn't at all smiled upon to burn an American flag. These days it might go over a little bit differently, but, I don't know, you don't look like the good guy in that situation.
He had some controversial remarks about President Barack Obama's Nobel Peace Prize. He said it was premature, and he said, that's wrong. I'm sorry.
I have similar thoughts about the Peace Prize, but
he was talking. They were doing an interview, and he said somebody asked him, and the interviewer said that he thought that the Peace Prize was premature. And in the interview, John Mayer said, "I love you. You're beautiful, but shut your fucking mouth." Which, like, he obviously doesn't know how to do interviews without saying wild shit. Yeah. Like,
so he was telling the interviewer to shut up.
Yeah.
He said that the Peace Prize was...
Do you want to hear what he said?
Yes.
You're not building a journalistic career. You're making yourself look like a moron, and you're not a moron. He concluded the interview by declaring, "I'm going to forcefully sodomize your editor." This man is unstable.
I don't even... I'm trying to connect the dots. Like, what... How do we get here?
He said in a Rolling Stone interview, he was looking to date a woman with, quote, a beautiful vagina... Oh, horrible! Can you believe? And they put daughters on the playlist at work, which now that I've listened
icky.
To, it's icky. It is. It's icky, and it's also like now I know this stuff. I don't know this man. I mean, this man sounds really off the wall.
I remember one time we were sitting at the table with my friends in college, and he was like, "What was that John Mayer song? Girls become brothers that turn into mothers or something."
Oh, Girls Become Brothers. that song is so reductive, embarrassing.
And kind of sexist and weird. Just
the part of it that I hate the most, I mean, obviously, like, girls become lovers and turn into mothers.
Yeah. And fathers.
If you want to be a mother, that's totally fine. It's a very reductive song. It's also, the verse where he says, "Boys you can break, find out how much they can take." Boys, I know the song because they played it. The boys will be strong and boys carry on, but boys will be gone. So, like, he talks so much about how the boys are the carrying, like, all of the pressure of having these mothers and women and lovers in their lives. And I'm like, This is so embarrassing. Like, yeah. I think it's supposed to be a pro-women song, and it comes off so condescending.
It comes off condescending and misogynistic, and even the way that he phrases, like, the importance of fathers, where he's like, yeah. Fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls become lovers that turn into mothers, so mothers, be good to your daughters, too. And it's just like, I don't know, man.
It feels like such a weird position. It feels a little icky,
and I always dislike, I mean... To me, there's a very important needle to thread with, like, father-daughter songs.
Yeah.
Like, there are some that have done it well, where it's, like, yes. the love of a father for his daughter. But a lot of them come off kind of creepy. And, yeah. like, possessive. And, possessive. Like, I don't know, like...
Yeah. I mean, I just can't help it. Daughters is a gorgeous song. I think it's so pretty. But to dance to it at your wedding means you have yeah. not listened to the lyrics fully.
Well, it's like when people try to dance Sorry. To Holly Sears' Cherry Wine.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big thing where people will dance to that at their weddings. And I'm like, do you know what this song is about? It is beautiful, yes, but listen to the words.
I know. That's, yeah.
Like, you're better off singing In a Week, which is a song about dying and decomposing with his lover. But yes. that's more romantic yeah. than freaking Cherry Wine.
Oh, man, I thought you said 1 Week by the Bare Naked Ladies. Is that what it is?
Oh, well, maybe. But no, I'm in a Week by Hozier.
Yeah. It's been.
That's also on my playlist. And I'm just like, oh, it's cute. Just like, literally, like, we're going to get eaten by ravens and foxes and die together.
I know, right? I am not going to continue talking about John Mayer, but all I'm saying is he did share some deeply problematic thoughts on being black.
Wait,
with Playboy and casually used the N-word. I was trying to figure out why he said that.
What were his thoughts? This is what he said. Let me read this one. Someone asked me the other day, what does it feel like now to have a hood pass? Which, first of all, whoever said
who
that?
Who asked Mayer, you, John Mayer?
A hood pass. Mayer said, and by the way, it's sort of a contradiction in terms, because if you really had a hood pass, you could call it a nigga pass. Why are you pulling a punch and calling it a hood pass if you really have a hood pass? But I said, I can't have a hood pass. I've never walked into a restaurant, asked for a table, and been told we're full.
So I guess what he's saying is...
But then he says, although Mayer apologized on Twitter for using, quote, emotionally charged slurs, he never addressed the other racist remarks, like comparing his penis to David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, my God.
I don't even know how.
Wow.
I don't even come up. Hey, babe, my penis is like the Grand Wizard of the
Ku Klux Klan.
What is happening?
What does that mean? Oh my gosh. Oh. I found a new least favorite person.
Oh, and then he said, when asked whether black women, quote, throw themselves at him, Mayer replied, I don't think I open myself to it. My dick is sort of like a white supremacist. And then additionally, when asked whether he'd ever kissed a man, Mayer used a slur for gay people. Quote, I remember seeing Perez Hilton flitting about the club, acting as though he had just invented homosexuality. All of a sudden, I thought, if I can out-gay this guy right now, Mayer told Playboy, I grabbed him and gave him the dirtiest, tonguiest kiss I've ever put on anybody. Almost as if I hated F slurs. What?
Wow. What? And also, again, who asked you to do that?
Oh, also, this is the age gap I was talking about. When he dated Taylor Swift, he was 32 and she was 19.
And then he bashed her for writing Dear John.
Yeah, and said it was lazy songwriting.
I'm like, she's basically still a teenager. This is very, like, kind of creepy in, like, the way that she, like... This is the words that she wrote about him. Dear John, I see it all now. It was wrong. Don't you think 19's too young to be played by your dark, twisted games when I loved you so? Like, I mean, she was still
Yeah, she was young. Definitely like a kid, basically. She was a teenager. I mean, you know, she was technically an adult, but she was still a teenager. 2 years later, he complained to Rolling Stone that she, quote, humiliated him. Quote, it made me feel terrible, he told the magazine in 2012, because I don't deserve it. I'm pretty good at taking accountability, and I never did anything to deserve that. It was a really lousy thing for her to do. I don't know,
he
John.
He never
when
thought.
When you're 32 and you're dating a 19-year-old, it's hard for you to like the good guy in this situation.
The power dynamic, like, again, this is another person where obviously he doesn't think about, like, even if he sounds like a grody guy,
yeah.
But, like, he doesn't think about the PR aspect of it either. Like, he's saying stuff like, can you imagine what goes through your mind if you're sitting, you're doing an interview, and you are going to say the F slur, you're going to say
the N-word
just casually, like, He sounds like he's so up his own booty that, like, he's like, oh, it'll be cool if I say the N-word right now.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm some hood pass. And then talking, and then
some thoughts.
Tag butthurt that the 19-year-old girl you dated when you were far too old for her wrote a song about you. Like, dude.
Anyway, let's shout out to Callie Algram. She's the writer of this Insider article. If you want to learn more about John Mayer and why he's problematic.
Boy, that's worse than I thought.
It is.
Why would you call your penis a white supremacist, Evangeline? Why would you say this?
I don't know. I don't have a penis, but I would never say that because it feels like he was like, somebody was like, oh, do you date many black women? He was like, what's the weirdest way I can say this? My penis is like David Duke, so gross.
Ew, like, why would you ever say that?
It has very, I hate to get political, but it has very Trumpy overtones where sometimes people would ask when he was president. Sometimes people would ask him questions and he would come up with the wildest, weirdest way to, because it had been in his heart and soul.
Yeah.
And you're like, there's no reason you would have talked about David Duke here unless for some reason you were thinking about him. Like, that, it's just a weird thing,
Who even lets the thought cross their mind, my penis is like a white supremacist? Why would you think that and then verbalize that?
Yeah. Why do you think, oh, I'm going to out-gay a guy at a party and then kiss him? Like, that's basically sexual harassment.
Oh, yeah, it's basically sexual harassment. And I hate Paris Hilton, but still, sexual harassment is wrong.
Yeah. To kiss somebody just to make them feel uncomfortable at a party? Like, okay. Like, this is, I don't know. He just, this has now become a John Mayer hate podcast.
John Mayer slander all the way.
I don't know. He's a great guitarist. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
He's a very good guitarist, but it does not... I think he has some sort of God complex where he feels like he can say whatever he wants, and he's gotten forgiven for a lot of this stuff, obviously.
Most white men are.
Yeah, because people idolize him, and they act like, you know... I mean, obviously, Daughters is a beautiful song, and, like, if you love it, I'm sorry, but there are a lot of weird things about that song that I didn't notice, because I really did like it for a long time.
I know, it's aesthetically nice, and then you listen to the words, like, oh, wait.
It seems like it's a good song about, like, a father loving his daughter, but when you really look at the lyrics, like, it's setting women up in such a negative light.
Yeah.
So, anyway, there's a great Punch Up the Jam episode about it, where they really go in depth. So that's another podcast if you want to
listen
to.
Yes, absolutely. Well, obviously, that's a good one to listen to.
Anyway, Y2K, right? Music, John Mayer, horrible. obviously, you know, and we didn't even mention Taylor Swift before, but Taylor Swift, this was her era. Like, things coming out during that time, things like Speak Now and Fearless and Sparks Fly, like, I mean, it was truly shaped my high school experience.
Back when she was, like, super, like, at country, too. I remember the first Taylor Swift song I heard was Tim McGraw, back when I went through my country phase, which...
Yeah. But she was doing it very well. She really did do it so well. She was so likable that's why something like the Kanye thing made her kind of into such a... icon.
It launched her into the phenomenon that she is. I mean, when Kanye says, I made that bitch famous, it's certainly a bit disingenuous because she was already famous. But in some ways, as a public personality, that Taylor Swift was born that
night.
And
it made her very kind of, like, sympathetic to a lot of people.
It did.
And we didn't even talk about Kanye.
She wrote that sympathy very far.
For a long time, maybe too long. Obviously, this was also a big time for Kanye coming up as well.
Yes.
I've talked about before how Late Registration is my favorite Kanye album. I still love it. Even though he's a controversial figure, I think it's a great album. One of the best examples of sampling I've ever heard in my life.
He's always been very good at sampling. I love Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. That's probably my favorite
album. I do
album.
Too. Yeah. I've been listening to Watch the Throne a lot. Oh my gosh. Like, also obviously Jay-Z. Like,
oh yeah.
This was such an
early Beyonce, like Baby Boy, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Diva, Halo, Upgrade You. Like, oh my gosh, Crazy in Love. Like, She was not missing at this point. She's never missed, I would say, but she did not miss it. Love on Top, oh my gosh.
Speaking of missing, and Beyonce, did you hear the Ashley Tisdale, Debbie Ryan cover of Say My Name?
Was
that the worst thing you've ever heard?
Horrible. Well, they made it into, like, a very slow ballad.
Which was a mistake, first of all.
And I don't want to be mean, but, like, I did not know Debbie Ryan couldn't really sing that well. Ashley Tisdale isn't terrible, yeah,
she's,
but...
like, Ashley Tisdale's just boring. She's not vocally horrible, but, like, Debbie Ryan sounds awful. She sounds like every, like, coffee shop folk singer, but not even good. Like, everything she sang was like this. And I'm just like, what is happening? Like,
and I also hate it when they take, like... like obviously like R&B songs and they make them into kind of these washed out guitar things. It's like when people do No Scrubs like super slow and weird.
Just like it's always white people too. I mean, I've heard some white people do Say My Name decently, like Hozier I think covered it actually.
Really?
Yeah, but that was not it. That was the worst cover ever.
I think Bastille did No Scrubs too once, and that was fun. Enjoy that.
But. Yeah, if you do something fun with it, or like, you know, change the creative style, but don't just
but
be
don't
like...
don't suck the life out of it.
Say my name. Like, come on, no one wants to hear that.
Exactly. Well, this has been another episode of Hot Tea Hot Takes.
Yes, and like another one where we go off on some weird tangents, but that's why you love us.
Yeah.
And now we're actually drinking tea today.
We are.
Yeah, we took 2 weeks off. And did some stuff. But we actually came back. We're drinking tea. We're both drinking peach tea with honey. It's pretty lit.
It's very good. Well, we hope that you have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again next week.
Bye.
Bye.
For more shows like this one, visit rockcandyrecordings.com.